7. Faith is part of the Christian event. The attitude of one who is struck by the Christian event, who recognizes it and adheres to it, is called faith. Our position regarding the event of Christ is the same as that of Zacchaeus before that man who stopped under the tree that he had climbed and told him, "Come down quickly, I am coming to your place." It is the same position as that of the widow whose only son had died and who heard Jesus saying, in a way that appears so irrational to us, "Woman, do not weep." It is absurd to say such a thing to a mother whose only son has died. For them, as for us, it was the experience of the presence of something radically different from what we imagine, and at the same time, something that totally and originally corresponds to the profound expectations of our person. To experience a total correspondence with our heart is something absolutely exceptional. In fact, the word exceptional exactly denotes the experience of such a correspondence. Since our heart is made for this correspondence, it should be something normal in life. But, on the contrary, it never happens. When it does happen, it is an exceptional experience. Faith is having the sincerity to recognize, the simplicity to accept, and the affection to cling to such a presence. Sincerity and simplicity are analogous words. To be simple means to look something in the face, without bringing in extraneous factors borrowed from outside. The fact that Christianity is an event is hard for most people to accept, because something foreign to such an announcement slips in. A trendy opinion, the preconception that determines the current mentality, the nihilism that prevails, facile skepticism. Rather, we must look at the fact, at the event, with simplicity. In other words, we must look at the event for what it says, for what it communicates to reason, what it communicates to the heart, without bringing in external factors to evaluate it, for they have nothing to do with it. Analogously, one looks sincerely at a message if one looks at how it is brought and at what it says, without introducing ifs, buts, and maybes, the rapid-fire ways by which the imposture that lurks in man, the lack of a real desire for the truth, separates us from reality, disturbs our contact with it, makes us run away, preventing us from knowing it and judging it. The opposite of sincerity, that is, what is bogus, false, points to the introduction of something foreign into the relationship with reality. Being simple and sincere means to exclude the ifs, buts, and maybes, and to speak plainly. "He gave sight to a man born blind," says St. John's Gospel. All that the Pharisees said and objected to had nothing to do with what had happened. It was born out of something foreign to the fact, from a preconception that was already in them. On the contrary, the man born blind said, "I could not see before. Now I can see. Therefore this man is a prophet, because God does not do things like this for no reason." The blind man looked at the event that had touched him with simplicity and sincerity. In considering an object, especially if it has to do with life, we go wrong when we allow questions and factors foreign to the object to creep in. They alter our relationship with it and hamper our affection for it. To know, we need an attitude of openness, that is, of love. Without love, man cannot know. After all, this love is manifest in that original instinct with which nature, in other words, God who creates us, launches us, through our curiosity, into a universal comparison. Man naturally reaches out to reality with curiosity, and this is the affirmation of an ineffable positivity. Replacing the original attitude, curiosity, with ifs, buts, and maybes, approaching reality with our arms shielding our eyes, is a lack of sincerity and simplicity. In the end, only that lively openness to the object that becomes affection enables the object to touch us for what it is, a fici, to be touched by. Just as man walks with his whole self, he sees with his whole self too. He sees with the eyes of reason insofar as his heart is open. That is to say, insofar as affection keeps his eyes open. Otherwise, his eyes close before the object. They go to sleep. They turn away. Thus, the eye of reason sees, to the degree that it is sustained by affection, which already expresses freedom's engagement. A person recognizes Christ's presence because Christ wins the person over. In other words, faith can only happen in man and in the world if something that is grace, pure grace, happens first. The Christ event, the encounter with Christ, in which man experiences something exceptional that cannot happen on its own. Essentially, faith is recognizing a presence that is different, recognizing an exceptional, divine presence. What is exceptional does not normally happen, and when it happens, one says, "This is something quite different. There is a superhuman power here." Think of how many times the Samaritan woman had thirsted for the attitude with which Christ treated her in that instant. She had never realized it before, but when it happened, she recognized it. Faith is part of the Christian event because it is part of the grace that the event represents, part of what it is. Faith belongs to the event because, as loving recognition of the presence of something exceptional, it is a gift. It is a grace. Just as Christ gives himself to me in a present event, he brings to life within me the capacity for grasping it and recognizing it in its exceptionality. Thus, my freedom accepts that event and acknowledges it. So in us, faith is both the recognition of the exceptional that is present and the simple and sincere adherence that says yes and does not object. Recognition and adherence are part of the moment in which the Lord reveals himself to us through the power of his Spirit. They are part of the moment when the event of Christ enters our life. To recognize him in life is a gift of the Spirit, which always implies the simplicity of heart, the assertion of an original candor that is part of our origin. For God creates us with our eyes and heart wide open to reality, positively reaching out to it, so that when we meet something, we can say, "This is it." God creates man with this positive outlook and this affection for reality. Recognizing Christ is a grace, and it is a gift of ourselves to him in original simplicity. The event of Christ is God's love for man, recognized by man's love for God. Only hatred for being can ultimately refuse the opportunity to recognize him, and hatred for being is the opposite of what we are originally, the opposite of how man is conceived in his mother's womb. This is why, in St. Matthew's Gospel, Jesus says, "I thank you, Father, because you have hidden these things from the wise and have revealed them to the humble." The loving acknowledgement of an exceptional presence. Faith is the acknowledgement that God has become a factor of present experience. As acknowledgement, it is an act of reason, a judgment, rather than a feeling or a state of mind. Faith is the fulfillment of human reason. It is the intelligence of reality in its ultimate horizon, the recognition of that in which everything consists. Natural intelligence cannot reach this ultimate horizon. It is only through something that has happened, through the event of God made man, through his gift, that our renewed intelligence can recognize and touch him. Thus, faith reaches an apex beyond reason. Without faith, reason is not complete. Whereas, in faith, reason becomes the ladder of hope. Faith is rational, for it flourishes on the extreme boundary of the rational dynamic, as a flower of grace to which man adheres with his freedom. How can man adhere to this flower with his freedom? This flower that is incomprehensible, both in its origin and in its making. For man, adhering with his freedom means unhesitatingly recognizing, with simplicity, what his reason perceives as exceptional, as he does with the unassailable, indestructible evidence of factors and moments in reality as they enter his own personal horizon. Since it is a knowledge that lets itself be totally determined by the object, faith is a loving recognition. It is a loving knowledge, one that is simple and unequivocal, one that implies an attachment. This loving knowledge makes us say, as it made Peter say, "If I were not to believe this man, I could not even believe my own eyes." Since the object of faith is the normal and proper object of reason, its object is the divine that is present, not the divine, but the divine present in the human. For us to recognize it, it is necessary first of all that it manifest itself through an exceptional presence. This exceptionality captures man's heart, think of the Samaritan woman, so that we can recognize it and adhere to it in virtue of a correspondence we have perceived. This perception leads us to welcome it without delay and to adhere to it wholeheartedly. The entire self, intelligence, and affection is moved in this acknowledgement, laden with love. Thus, man can say, "All that you have done, all that you have said, corresponds so deeply to me that I cannot help recognizing present in you that which you are." Man's contribution, then, lies in the fact that man is able to cry out, "Christ, save me." Man's freedom is summed up in the entreaty, "Accepting that all is grace, I ask you for grace." This is how we completely take into account both the fact that all is grace and the fact that, for its effect, Christ's grace depends on my freedom too. Everything starts off from the acknowledgement of a gift already given. Entreaty is the point of marriage, the point of spousal union between man's freedom and Christ. The Spirit and the bride say, "Come." Man's part is entreaty, the cry of the beggar, the cry of expectation, or the delight of desire. Entreaty and offering. So the question arises when faced with a presence. Otherwise, it is not a reasonable question. Now, you don't have to have completed the journey to acknowledge the presence. The question launches the journey, an itinerary of questions addressed to a you who is present. "Who are you?" as the astonished 12 asked him, and as Pascal's confused blind man asks. Without this itinerary of questions, the initial question was not a true one either. The initial correspondence between the present divine and the expectation of the heart sets the premise for a journey in which the other, Christ, in the end, answers, "I am God." One who has experienced the wonder of correspondence will kneel down and adore him. He will say yes to him. This is the journey Zacchaeus made. After Simon, he is the most significant figure from this point of view. Nothing is more human than what Zacchaeus felt when he felt that man looking at him. That man who said to him, "Come down, I am coming to your place." He must not even have thought of God in that moment. But later he must have pondered, or at least thought back to what that man had said to him. Outstripping his every imagination, Jesus had disconcerted him so much that from that moment on, he lived totally defined by that encounter. The same happened to Peter when faced with Jesus' question, "Who do you say I am?" He answered impetuously, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Man's answer to Christ's request is the entreaty to be able to respond to his request, for nothing can happen except through grace. If this starting point is made clear, we still have the pretension of being able to answer by ourselves and of being able to adhere by ourselves. Peter's answer does not make him immediately able to love Christ. That is to say, it does not make him automatically consistent. Peter wants to love Christ. In him there is the recognition of Christ, and as a consequence, he should adhere to Christ and do what Christ tells him to do. Yet he is a sinner. "Get behind me." Even when faced with the question, "Do you love me?" he must have felt really ashamed. He answered, "Lord, you know I love you." This statement is tantamount to recognizing that the ultimate horizon of one's life and of everything is his presence, and asking to adhere to it. Offering is the ultimate consequence of faith. It is just saying, "Oh Lord, you know I love you." Offering does not require a tremendous effort, but only, "I recognize who you are." And one cannot say, "I recognize who you are," without feeling that one is plunging into the humiliation of one's sinful nothingness, and, paradoxically, without at the same time perceiving the beginning of freedom, which becomes an entreaty to the one who is present and has created the request.